In particular, I remember attending a concert in Leipzig 12 years earlier, some 2 or 3 months after the Nazis had taken over in Germany. The concert was by the famous Gewandhaus Orchestra in their home concert hall in Leipzig. The great Bruno Walter had been scheduled to lead the orchestra that night, but because of his non-Aryan blood, he was replaced by a prominent conductor who was strongly in favor with the Nazis, in spite of a somewhat non-Aryan appearance. I remember the gas-lit hall full of good German burgers playing tribute to Brahms, but rejecting a great non-Aryan conductor. End of insertion. It may have been in Frankfurt that three of us decided one evening to go to the dinner, to go to the movies. This seemed a strange thing to do, but one of the first things that the army did on arriving in a town was to set up a movie theater for the entertainment of the troops. We started out before dark, walked a not very great distance to a small movie house where power was supplied by an American generator on a truck which had been wheeled to the door of the theater. The movie was by Rita Hayworth and was a very good one, I recall. When we came out, the blackout was in full swing, and it was a real blackout. You could not see a thing. No sign of the sky. No sign of anything but complete blackness. We had to hold on to each other and grope our way through the streets, where of course there was no traffic. It was a rather interesting experience, which I believe we never repeated. When we first arrived at the little Monceau in Aachen, we found that they had small supply of wine on hand, acquired recently in a raid on a deserted wine shop in Cologne. Someone had discovered that the shop had a cellar containing several barrels of wine. The word spread, and a number of GIs came to the cellar to fill our canteens or any other vessels they could find with wine. As the numbers of wine liberators increased, there were not enough spigots on the barrels to satisfy them. So those who couldn't get out the spigot used their pistols to open up more holes in the barrels. The result was a full of wine, which caused a small lake of wine on the cellar floor, according to the accounts reaching me. One might have hoped for a little good Rhine wine, but the stuff our boys had acquired had been a dubious quality of blank. It was not a wholly creditable performance, but at least the little bit that was left was consumed gradually, and at no time did I see any drunkenness in the Alsace unit as near the front as we were. Another incident developed when we went to a company headquarters established in a Stolwerk factory somewhere in the Cologne area. We went there in the hope of being able to cadge a little lunch, which was often possible if one arrived at a company mess at the right time. We were a little late, but were hospitably received. There were some three or four of us who preferred a company mess to a K ration eaten off the hood of the car of the Jeep. And the cook apologized that he had only a little bit of chicken left, but we made out all right. And the bit of chicken was far beyond our dreams. The reason for the chicken is the reason that I am recounting this. When this unit, at whose headquarters we were, at first reached the city, they established a headquarters in a house, and were billeted here and there. Some citizen of the city sent word to the German troops across the river where the headquarters was located, the result being a bombardment a mortar fire in which the commanding colonel was seriously wounded, perhaps losing a leg. Search for the source of information ensued, and it developed that the spy, or loyal German subject, depending on one's view, had sent the message by carrier pigeon to the army, to the German troops on the far side. The carrier pigeons were located and brought to the company mess, where they provided a gourmet meal of squab to the GIs. Word of this incident reached the press, and reporters appearing at the company headquarters demanded to see the company eating squab. The squab had long since been consumed, but some chickens were found, and the press photographers took photographs of the GIs gnawing on chicken bones, which for press purposes served as an adequate substitute for squab bones. Indeed, they predominantly showed up better in the pictures and did not influence the press reporting the fine meal depicted in the picture as squab. Here we had another example of press enterprise, if not accuracy. Our return to Aachen had been on April 6th. On the following day, we drove over to Cologne and visited the Chemical Institute once more to collect a number of additional documents. Normally, documents brought back to Aachen were studied at our house there, the little Monceau, for as much time as we had free. But we're forwarded back, we're sent back to Paris whenever transportation was available. In the course of our driving in the general area of Aachen, we sometimes encountered strategic bridges over small streams, rivers. And some of these bridges were protected from dive bombing by hostile planes by means of sausage balloons attached to the ground near the end of the bridge by a long steel cable which extended from 100 feet to from 100 to 300 or 400 feet in the air. These cables could have entangled hostile dive bombers. During these small activities of the Alsace mission, the great drive of the American armies toward the east had been progressing with surprising rapidity. Word came that we could proceed some distance into central Germany now. Consequently, we crossed the Rhine again on April 10th, and drove east and north to Marburg. On the way, we passed through Wetzlar, familiar as a source of fine optical equipment, and Gießen, a small university town which had been heavily damaged in the bombing. One building of the university had been bombed to such an extent that a corner of it formed a pinnacle at the third floor level. Of this pinnacle, one could make out a board with pegs sticking out of it, designed for the drying of chemical flasks and beakers. This was the only evidence that this had been a university chemical laboratory. We continued from Gießen to Marburg, where we found a house on the outskirts of the city to spend the night. The house had been largely emptied of furniture and small things by its normal occupants, but beds with springs on them remained. The house had a lovely view over a small valley to a sloping green hill where one could make out the monuments of a cemetery. The town itself had not been much damaged and presented an interesting show of old streets. On the following morning, which was brilliantly clear, as we went outside, we sensed something far overhead in the sky, and looking up, saw a great fleet of flying fortresses heading to the northeast toward Berlin. These fortresses were fairly clearly visible, but fine metallic specks darting in and out among them were fighters accompanying them for protection. There was something strangely uplifting to the spirit of an American in the sight of the tremendous power of the United States coming into play. For years we had heard, until relatively recently, we had heard reports and read them in the papers of the demolition of Britain by German bombing and the destruction of our warships in the Pacific by Japanese bombers. Now it was thrilling in the extreme to see these great American weapons on the way to destroy our enemies. We left Marburg shortly and drove through Kassel. In his memoirs on the war, General Omar Bradley tells of an offer by the airborne chief of staff to organize a large-scale airdrop on Kassel for April 20th. Bradley declined the offer, saying he expected to be in Kassel by April 10th. Actually, the American forces captured Kassel on April 2nd. Before our passage through the city, we continued on to Göttingen, where we arrived in the late afternoon. Göttingen was an ancient, small city, the seat of one of the great German universities, indeed second only to Berlin in science. Many old streets and villages and houses remained in the city, and a large part of the ancient city wall was intact. We made our way through the city toward a house where we expected to set up quarters. The city itself was in turmoil, having been evacuated by the German troops only a few days previously. As we drove through one of the major streets, we saw a single American tank clanking up the street with a German dog pursuing hotly, barking and snarling, undoubtedly a good Nazi, possibly an SS dog. An American GI was sprawling on the back of on the rear end of the tank, with his legs spread out to hold himself in position. While the dog was snarling almost at his feet, the GI pulled a large pistol, which he held in both hands, while he took two or three shots at the dog, missing completely. Like most incidents which we encountered along the way, that's all there was to it. But it seems to stick in my mind. When we arrived at the house, which one or two advanced members of Alsace had reserved for us, we found it near the outskirts of the city, surrounded by a small garden. The house itself, which German inhabitants later told me was known as the Strawberry House because of the color of its stucco, had belonged to a successful German industrialist who had done himself quite well. There was elaborate plumbing not functioning at the time, and a considerable amount of bedroom space where we could set up sleeping bags. Also, much of the furniture remained. This was to be established as the northeastern Alsace headquarters, to be used for some months to come. Aachen was soon abandoned, and Heidelberg was the seat of the slightly more central Alsace headquarters. My operations list shows almost immediate interviews with four prominent professors of the University of Göttingen. Prandtl, Prandtl, Betz, Betz, Eucken, Eucken, and Telschow, Telschow. Eucken, delete. Prandtl's name was familiar as that of the number one aerodynamicist in the world. His institute was ranked first as a great center of aerodynamics research. It was now being used in part as an officer's mess. Prandtl himself had retired to be succeeded by Betz. I remember Prandtl as a quiet, elderly German of poise and distinction. sets appeared to be about the same age as Pronto, whom he had succeeded as director. I had no real competence. I had no competence in aerodynamics, but could at least get an idea of the general status of their research and to what